It's possible that I'm not ready.
Somehow you'll find a way.
Yeah, also, Charlton Thorpe does not care. You're not ready? Tough. Tough weenie beanies. Oh, man. Hey, everybody, I'm Kyle Rusdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. Making today make sense is what we do.
I'm Amy Scott, in for Kimberly Adams. Thanks for joining us on this Monday. Kai and I will have some news for you and some Make Me Smiles to brighten things up. So let's start with the news fix.
And this one actually might make people smile, because granted, my actual Make Me Smile is a little inside baseball. But look, so let's think globally here for a second. Shanghai has been locked down for, I think it's 25 days now. And oh, by the way, just a little public service announcement here. If you, dear listener, are not following our Shanghai-based correspondent and colleague Jennifer Pack on Instagram, and I think she's...
Yeah.
Oh, God, what is she? JPack Radio? I'll look it up while Amy's doing her thing. Or somebody can put it in the Slack. She is amazing on Instagram, and you are getting a blow-by-blow of what it's like to be in Shanghai without being able to get out to get food. It's crazy. It's crazy.
It's unreal.
So follow her on Instagram, because she's great.
Yeah.
So the news of the day is that those lockdowns, I mean, now it's actually just mass testing in Beijing because they found some cases there, but lockdowns are not far away. So you'll have the major financial center of the second biggest economy in the world locked down and the government capital of the second biggest economy in the world locked down. So that's not going to be great. But here's why that might not be so bad. And this is in Bloomberg today. They are reporting that oil demand in China, fuel consumption in April, is set to be down 20% from a year ago. That's a million barrels a day, 1.2 something million
wow.
barrels a day, which is, look, it's terrible just COVID and pandemic wise, but in a situation where we are globally stressed for oil, that's not a bad thing. And also, by the way, it's good to just use less oil.
Yeah.
So that's, I think that's, look, that's why oil was under $100 today, 98 something dollars a barrel for West Texas Intermediate, the US benchmark. So that's kind of not great news, but not terrible news, if you can think about it that way. And that was the thing that caught my eye today. Other than that other thing that we probably ought to talk about once you do your eye.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Wait,
was there some news today? Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's interesting about oil because, as you said, it's a not great reason for something that's actually probably going to be good for people here in terms of inflation and...
Right.
Also the climate. So, yeah, interesting turn of events. So mine is related to that other news in a way. I'm going to talk about Elon Musk, but not that he finally, very rapidly made a deal to buy Twitter for $44 billion, which we should talk about. But I wanted to tell you about something else I saw, which is, I mean, maybe just a little bit of a distraction, but so, you know, he owns a bunch of companies. We talked about this on the show last week. Besides Tesla and SpaceX, he also owns The Boring Company, which has a funny name for a company that digs tunnels. It's a civil engineering firm, and the company announced today on Twitter that it will begin full-scale Hyperloop testing later this year. What is a Hyperloop, you may ask?
I was just going to say, what, Amy Scott, is the Hyperloop? Do tell.
Well, I had to look it up, and I read some stories in TechCrunch and Fortune, which we'll post on our website. But this is something that Musk first proposed back in 2013, and it was just a theoretical paper that he put out for a solar-powered, super-fast transportation system that would move people through low-pressure tubes traveling up to 760 miles per hour, which sounds totally wild, right? He called it a cross between a Concorde, a railgun, and an air hockey table. And if this thing worked, you could travel, you know, from LA to San Francisco in 35 minutes, which is, you know, a trip that if anyone's ever done it by car, takes about 6 hours.
It would be amazeballs. It was crazy. It would be great.
It would be amazeballs. And apparently, you know, it was just a theory, but he kind of shared his designs with, you know, made them open source and hoped that university researchers would work on this. Virgin actually started a company called Virgin Hyperloop, which did a test in November 2020.
That.
I didn't either.
Oh.
I mean, I kept waiting for this to turn out to just be a joke, but the reporting indicates that, you know, this has been at least in the works, although the test only reached a speed of 100 miles per hour for a few seconds. So it's still, we're not anywhere close. But the company is now saying they're going to begin full-scale testing this year. So who knows?
That'd be super cool. Be super cool.
Kind of amazing.
All right. Should we touch briefly on the other Elon Musk news of the day?
Yeah. Yeah. I was hoping you would because you've been following this way closer than I have.
So I'm gonna start, first of all, with a mea culpa, and that is I was completely wrong about this deal. I thought for sure he was trolling the entire planet. I thought for sure that him pricing it at $54.20 a share, which is to say 50 for 20 a share, because we know he loves marijuana jokes, right? I thought that was the clue, that he was just screwing with us and it wasn't going to come together. And then he gets $44 billion in financing lined up, part of it from Morgan Stanley, part of it from him against his Tesla shares. And then today, the board says, okay, we're sold. So look, I have
two
thoughts.
Happened to the poison pill?
Yeah, they bailed, right? Because he got the money and they decided that, I think fundamentally what happened was they decided they didn't have a better plan. You know, they decided, all right, well, here, you do it. But look, I have two thoughts. Number one, the really concerning part about this for me is not whether Twitter is going to become a cesspool of racism and misogyny. Yes, that would be terrible. Don't get me wrong, but that's not the thing that's most on my mind right now. And I'm happy to explain why if people are curious. But here's what really is challenging for me about this. This is, as I said on Marketplace this afternoon, an American oligarch buying a global communications platform and taking all his toys and going home. And he just owns this thing.
Yeah.
And we're like, really?
Really? And he takes it private.
That's okay. Right. And so that stinks. Right?
Well, and that's directly related to the cesspool thing, by the way.
Well,
right?
Exactly. Right? Exactly. Yeah. And here's the thing about the cesspool thing, just to be clear. The people who will be threatened and harmed by Elon Musk turning this into what he has avowed he wants to, which is a platform for genuine, unrestricted free speech. The people who will be harmed by it, honestly, are not me, right? A white male with a lot of followers who doesn't get a lot of abuse online, right? I mean, I can count on the fingers of one hand the number of offensive things that have been said to me in tweets in the past, what's it been, 10 years, right? But women, the disadvantaged, people who are on the margins, they will be inundated with hate and abuse, and it will be terrible. It will be terrible. I mean, Nina Jankowicz, who was on Tech the other day and who we've had, I think, on this podcast in the last 4 or 5 years, just wrote a book about being a woman online. And it's a horror show, you know? And so I think that's really where the cesspool part is going to come into play. And that sucks. It just sucks.
Well, basically, you know, my whole feed today, because I'm on Twitter, like many journalists, it was like people talking about where they're going to go and where they, you know, bring back MySpace, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. But look, it's early days yet. So that was part one of what I was going to say. Part two is Walt Mossberg on Twitter, of course. But Walt Mossberg, the longtime tech columnist and journalist for the Wall Street Journal, said today, interesting speculation. Things are going to change under Elon Musk. We just don't know how. I'm trying to ignore it and advise you to do the same. Speculation and prediction at this stage is almost always wrong because, in point of fact, Musk has, you know, been the guy at Twitter now for like 4 hours. So I think we have to see how it plays out.
Right. And it's not even final. Like, it has to actually
go through. Well, look, but it's going to close, right? I mean, there's not going to be antitrust concerns. And yes, Congress is going to, you know, subpoena him and say, let us come, or you come here and we'll yell at you about Twitter. But the deal's going to close, you know, I think.
Yeah.
I think. Super quick, just from Bridget Bodner in the Slack, it's JPAC Radio, J, the initial J, P-A-K Radio on Instagram. Follow her. And you'll see what's going on in Shanghai.
Yeah.
And that's where we are. Sorry. Had to cough button because I had to cough because it's super dry.
Oh, you have a cough button? I just have to stifle it, folks.
I do have a cough button. Sorry.
No, that's the home studio.
See what happens.
It doesn't come with a cough button.
Yeah, that's right. You should just unplug it or something. All right, anyway, Charlton, take us to a happier place. Or maybe it's, I don't know, let me scroll down. Ron Carlos or is it Charlton? I don't even know.
Yeah, I think it's Charlton.
Okay. So my Make Me Smile is kind of lame in a geeky kind of way. I saw this go by late this afternoon. And number one, because I didn't have another Make Me Smile. But number two, it's a sign of return to normalcy. I decided to slide it in there. So the Federal Reserve meets next Tuesday and Wednesday, the 3rd and 4th of May. They will raise interest rates by 50 basis points, a half percentage point. I'm not. There's no spoiler alerts here because that's going to happen. Not a surprise. But for the first time in 2+ years, Jay Powell's press conference afterward will be in person. And I think that's a good thing. And that's just a little glimpse of normalcy. So there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So masks today
required,
when I was,
you know, testing probably and all that. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I just have one question about that, which is, will they still have will people still be able to ask questions virtually? Do you know?
That's a great question. I don't know. I don't know.
Because one thing probably, that I think has been interesting, like with local city council meetings and the like, is going virtual has really opened up access, you know, for people to go and maybe for good and bad, right? Like if you're a politician, maybe you don't want so much access. But I'm just curious, like, you know, it does make democracy or participating in democracy a little easier in those settings. I wonder if journalists will still have a way to ask questions virtually. I imagine they will.
That's a great question. The Bloomberg piece doesn't actually talk about it, so I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Well, we'll find out. Maybe we can get back to folks on that.
We will. There we go.
So mine, I can see why this segment was born, because I was looking for something today, and I was like, nothing makes me smile. I'm just going to have to come
there
up empty today.
Yep.
Then I
yep.
finally found one.
Which is okay.
Which is, there was, yeah. That's, I mean, that's the way things are. But so Ben Strauss has a story in the Washington Post today about one man's quest to correct the record about the invention of basketball, which I didn't know there was a debate about this. Yeah. So
James Naismith, the peach basket.
Yes.
Sorry,
so,
did I spoil
right.
that? Yes. Okay.
No, you didn't spoil that. That's the official story that this man named James Naismith, who was an athletic director at the YMCA, invented the game in 1891 using peach baskets. There's a whole like Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts, and everything.
You bet. Yeah.
But this story talks about how some research and a new book called Naismith suggests that a 16-year-old Swedish immigrant named Lambert Will actually beat him to it, starting a game that involved tossing cabbages into crates. And this was in the small town of Herkimer, New York. And I mean, I would just recommend read the story. It does leave you wondering. But as always, there's an economic angle, because the guy who's really pushing this story believes that it could lead to an economic revival of Herkimer, which is a very small town that's been hurt by the loss of industry and the opioid epidemic. And he wants to start a museum that would, you know, tell this story and rival the Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield. So, you know, if he gets his wish, it could maybe be a boon for his small town in central New York.
Herkimer. That's a good name.
I know.
That's a good name.
I love the names in this whole story.
Very good name. That's right. I had not heard that story, and that's a good one. Leaves you going.
Pretty interesting.
Pretty interesting. There you go. So
I thought
sometimes,
as a history buff, you'd like that.
There you go. And that's the deal about the Make Me Smile portion of this podcast, by the way. Sometimes it's just things that make you go, huh, all right, I'm good with that.
Yeah. There was a song with that title, right?
That's right. Yeah, I think there is, yes. All right, we're done. We're out of here. We are back tomorrow, Ms. Scott and myself, for the deep dive, talking about the buy-to-rent market. What is that, you say? Well, it's investors putting more and more money into homes specifically designed to be rented out. It's a whole long real estate story, which our real estate correspondent, one Amy Scott, will be making us all smart on as we ask good questions of the person who's going to be with us.
That's right. And you can tell us what you thought about today's show. Send us a voice memo or an email to makemesmart@marketplace.org. Or you can call and leave us a voice message at 508-UB-SMART.
Just waiting. Here we go. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera with some help from Mark K. Green. Our intern is Tiffany Bowie. Today's program was engineered by, yes, I was right the first time, Charlton Thorpe.
Our senior producer is Bridget Bodner, and the director of On Demand is Donna Tam.
There we go.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.